We've all done it. Stock our fridge with good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice nutrition for convenience. Keep your body and mind nourished with whole body meal shakes from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But it actually tastes delicious. Try one of Kachava's indulgent flavors today. Your future self will thank you. Go to kachava.com and use code SMOOTHIE for 15% off your next order. That's Kachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code SMOOTHIE. We've all done it. Stock our fridge with good intentions, only to have our future self sacrifice nutrition for convenience. Keep your body and mind nourished with whole body meal shakes from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But it actually tastes delicious. Try one of Kachava's indulgent flavors today. Your future self will thank you. Go to kachava.com and use code Pandora for 15% off your next order. That's Kachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, code Pandora.
Why is this never talked about?
It really is one of those stories, isn't it?
Yeah, it's this Midwestern urban legend that feels like it's sitting right on that fault line between pure folklore and actual recorded history.
Mm-hmm.
It's a story about this really beloved local figure, Otto, this huge, sprawling theme park, greasy grove, and, well, a door that really shouldn't have been there.
A single yellow door.
Exactly. So today we're doing a deep dive. We're going into the scattered sources, the local accounts, the bits and pieces surrounding Greasy Grove, Ohio, trying to unravel this mystery of Otto, the founder, and that one yellow panel that, well, some stories say basically swallowed him whole.
Right. And our mission here for you listening is to get a quick but really thorough understanding.
Mm-hmm.
How does local memory mix with, let's say, operational secrets?
Yeah, we want to pull out those key nuggets. Why does this forgotten tale still kind of echo, you know?
Yeah.
Especially in those corners of local history forums online.
And I think the reason those echoes are so enduring starts with just how intense the public affection for Otto was initially. You absolutely have to start there.
Okay, so set the scene. Where are we?
We're in the mid-1960s, Greasy Grove Amusement Park in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to picture it. It wasn't just a business that was doing well. It was this absolute wonderland, peak Americana vibe.
Right, like the dream.
Totally. And Otto, the owner, he wasn't just some guy in an office. He was the gravitational center of this whole universe.
Yeah.
The sources, they consistently describe him as overwhelmingly charismatic.
Okay.
Like greeting every single visitor he could. And apparently he had this smile.
Mm.
The local saying was that it could melt steel.
Wow, okay. That's the stuff of legend right there. Not just an owner. He's the icon.
Exactly.
And the reports mention this weird little detail, Ray, about autographs.
Yeah, it's fascinating. His personal presence, him being out there, it fostered this very specific localized autograph culture. People would talk about meeting Otto, getting his signature, maybe just a moment of his time.
And that was a big deal.
Huge. Often reported by visitors as being just as memorable, sometimes even more memorable, than riding the biggest, newest roller coaster in the park.
That really speaks volumes about his connection with people.
It does. And that personal warmth, that visible devotion, it really transformed Greasy Grove. It went from just this quiet little town to a major regional attraction. Families were coming in from surrounding states.
So the park becomes the town's engine, basically.
It was its beating heart, absolutely. Emotionally, economically. Life. The whole town's success was completely tied up with Otto's very visible, very overwhelming goodwill.
Hmm. So the stakes were incredibly high, emotionally speaking.
Precisely. Which sets the stage perfectly for this, the sense of loss and confusion when that visibility inevitably started to change.
Right, the pivot. So when does that happen?
It starts subtly. Mm. Early 1970s. The sources, they don't point to one big event. It's more like that famous smile just started fading gradually.
Not like a sudden disappearance.
No, not at all. His presence, which had been everywhere, started to thin out. Became more sporadic around the park grounds, less reliable. You know, 1 week he's there shaking hands, the next few weeks, maybe not.
And no announcement, like no press conferencing, Otto's taking a step back?
Nothing. No grand farewell tour, no celebration, just this quiet, creeping absence.
Yeah.
And that's where that initial affection, that adoration, starts to maybe curdle a little bit into like an uneasy feeling. Apprehension.
Because nobody knew why.
Exactly. It was like a vanishing act, perfectly designed for maximum intrigue. Some people speculated, sure, maybe he quietly retired. Others whispered about, you know, maybe a long illness or personal travel.
But nothing concrete.
Nothing. The really consistent detail across all the accounts, even from people who worked there for years, is this.
Yeah.
Nobody seemed to know the real confirmed reason for him pulling back.
The man who was the park just stops appearing.
Right. And that subtle, gradual withdrawal, that lack of answers, only deepens the mystery that eventually forms around that yellow door. So that subtle withdrawal, that's really where the mystery begins, you see.
Mm-hmm.
There's this huge vacuum created because Otto's not there anymore.
Right.
And the public story, the story people tell about the park, starts to drift away from what's actually happening behind the scenes, the operational reality.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting from an archival perspective is that the official record kind of freezes at that point.
You know,
the park keeps running. The systems are in place.
Business as usual on the surface.
Exactly. But the human story, Otto's story, it keeps moving. People keep asking questions. It reminds me a bit of that point about Real Wendy, how records can freeze while lives, or in this case disappearances, keep moving forward.
And the fact that there's no public reason, no confirmed explanation for why this huge local celebrity just vanishes.
That's the first real hint of maybe deliberate erasure. The silence itself becomes a piece of data. It's suspicious.
Okay, so the public-facing wonder kind of dies down quietly in the early 70s. But the mystery itself, the investigation part, that doesn't really kick off until later, right? 1976.
That's right. Years later.
Yeah.
And it happens far away from the cotton candy and the roller coasters. We have to completely shift the scene.
Where to?
We go from that bright, colorful, bustling Wonderland stage deep underground to the operational backstage.
Okay.
And we meet a new character, a guy named Jay Walker. New maintenance hire. And his job is about as mundane as it gets.
Which is?
Sweeping the park's underground service tunnels, places most guests, probably even most employees, never saw. Rarely accessed.
So picture this. Damp concrete floors.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The air is heavy, stale, bit of machine oil smell. And you hear this distant, kind of muffled roar from the coasters running cycles way up above ground.
Oh, total opposite of the park's image.
The absolute antithesis. Mm-hmm. This is where the magic gets stored, maintained, fixed, and maybe where things get hidden.
Right, and this is where the legend gets grounded. You mentioned a cold fact.
Yes, this is crucial. To separate the spooky story from the operational reality, Jay's walking through miles of these service corridors, and they were built with a very strict, very utilitarian logic.
Meaning
these tunnels housed dozens, maybe hundreds, of identical utility doors. Access panels, storage closets, electrical junction boxes, hydraulic controls, you name it.
Okay.
And crucially, they were all painted the same color. A uniform, high-visibility safety red.
Ah, the color coding.
Exactly. That red isn't just for decoration. It's an industrial standard. In maintenance infrastructure, especially somewhere like an amusement park, strict color coding is vital. Safety, efficiency.
So red usually means something specific.
Usually fire suppression equipment, emergency stops, maybe access points that need special training or clearance. It's designed to be predictable, monotonous even.
A system built for clarity, blend in, don't draw attention.
Precisely. The whole environment down there was meant to be this logical, repeating pattern that you just wouldn't pay special attention to. Routine.
And it's that exact predictability, that monotony.
Right. That makes the anomaly scream out.
Yeah. Because among all those identical repeating red doors, Jay finds one that completely breaks the pattern.
A peculiar yellow door. That's the word the sources use, peculiar. Wait,
and you have to imagine the visual contrast, right? Just this single yellow panel standing out against this seemingly endless hallway of red, red, red.
It's stark. That unique color, it immediately flags it as an exception, a deviation from standard operating procedure, something different.
And Jay's reaction?
Well, initially, he's just trying to do his job, right? Sweeping. He checks the handle, notes it's locked. And like probably any maintenance worker would, he just kind of shrugs it off.
Okay, just a weird old door.
Yeah, maybe an old storage closet they stopped using, painted wrong years ago. Yeah. Just an oddity in this huge hidden space full of weird machinery anyway. But
the seed was planted.
Oh, yeah. That yellow door stuck in his mind, that tiny break in the pattern. It definitely planted a seed of curiosity. So that locked yellow door, that anomaly, it doesn't stay just a curiosity for long, because the circumstances change fundamentally.
How so?
Well, Jay initially does the right thing. Follows the rules, sweeps the floor, ignores the weird door, moves on.
Okay.
But hours later, and this is key, it's well after the park is closed. The crowds are gone. Most of the staff have gone home. The whole complex is silent, empty. He's likely one of the only people still down there.
Late night maintenance shift.
Exactly. Yep. And he passes that same hallway again. And here's the rule break, the thing that changes everything. The yellow door, the one that was definitely, positively locked, solid, just hours before.
Yeah.
It's now cracked open, just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just enough to see darkness inside, enough to be an invitation, or maybe a warning.
Whoa, okay, hold on. If the park is sealed up for the night, and Jay's basically alone down there.
Right.
Then who opened it? And why wait until after hours, when nobody's around? That feels deliberate.
It raises that huge question of agency, doesn't it? Who, or maybe what, made that door accessible? And why then? Was it meant for Jay to find, or was he interrupting something?
So what does he do? He must go in.
Driven by, you know, probably a mix of real curiosity and maybe some serious apprehension, he pushes the door open.
Men inside.
Inside is, well, it's an absolute marvel of preservation, according to the accounts. It's Otto's old office.
Otto's office down there.
Apparently. And described as completely untouched, like it was frozen in time from whenever Otto last used it.
Wow.
The sensory details reported are really intense. The smell apparently was strong. Machine oil, yeah, but mixed with old paper, maybe wood from the desk, that kind of aged scent.
Okay.
But the most striking detail, the one that really stands out in the sources, the description is of a dustless office.
Wait, dustless? If this office was supposedly sealed up, untouched, since Otto vanished back in the early 70s, how could it possibly be dustless? That doesn't make sense.
Doesn't, does it? Unless
someone had been in there.
Recently.
Maintaining it.
Exactly. It implies recent, probably clandestine maintenance. That single detail transforms it from just an abandoned, forgotten space into something else, a meticulously cared for inner sanctum.
Suggesting someone, maybe Otto himself, maybe someone working for him, was regularly attending to this perfect time capsule long after everyone thought he was gone.
It really points toward the office itself not being merely abandoned storage, but a carefully protected space. Maybe designed to look abandoned from the outside, yet kept ready. For what? We don't know.
Okay, so Jay's inside this weirdly pristine time capsule office. What else does he see?
He ventures deeper in.
Burr.
Past the desk, which apparently still had some 1960s knickknacks on it, perfectly preserved. And as he goes further back, he notices something else, another critical detail.
Why?
There's another door tucked away, almost hidden, behind a large bookshelf.
A second door inside the secret office.
Mm-hmm. And this implies immediately that the office Jay just entered. That wasn't the real secret. That was just a front. A very well-maintained false front.
Layered concealment. Designed to stop anyone who just stumbled through the yellow door.
Deliberate. Suggesting the real secret wasn't just what Otto kept hidden, but what he kept hidden behind the first layer of secrets. It's almost like that Aladdin idea, uh-huh. You know? The treasure is usually behind another trap.
Okay, and the bookshelf. Just a regular bookshelf.
Ah, here's that rapid exchange moment. The bookshelf itself, it wasn't built into the wall like you might expect for a permanent hidden barrier.
The reports specifically mention it was resting on casters.
Small wheels, exactly. That suggests someone intended to move it, and probably move it quickly or easily.
So not just secrecy, but maybe frequent access, or the need for a quick getaway.
It implies the space behind it wasn't just dead storage. It was potentially operational, needed quick entry, or yeah, maybe rapid concealment or escape. The mobility is key.
Okay, so this leads us right to the edge, the big cliffhanger, the thing that's kept this story alive for decades.
Right. Jay's already breached two layers, the yellow door, the pristine office, the hidden bookshelf on wheels. Now he opens that second innermost door.
And what he saw?
The sources just say it was the kind of revelation that would leave the entire town of Greasy Grove in disbelief. Full stop.
And critically, that detail, what was actually behind that second door, it's intentionally missing. Scrubbed from the public record, absent from every version of the story that survives.
Mm-hmm. It's a masterful narrative device. Intentional or not, the legend keeps going because we don't know. The mystery itself becomes more powerful than any possible answer.
Right. So since we don't have that final piece, the actual contents, maybe they're lost, maybe they were never recorded properly, maybe Jay's testimony was heavily redacted, or maybe the room was empty by the time anyone else saw it. Who knows?
So we have to speculate based on the context.
Exactly. We have to analyze the possibilities through different lenses. And it's really important for you listening that we label these clearly. These are hypotheses, educated guesses, trying to explain Otto's vanishing act and why this double-layered secret place existed.
Four main theories, right? Four deep dive lenses. Because knowledge is always more valuable when you can look at it from multiple angles, think critically, especially when there's ambiguity like this.
Okay, let's dive in. Theory one. You called it the most mundane.
A mundane, perhaps, but potentially the most damaging to Otto's legacy. The archives theory.
Okay.
This idea suggests that the yellow door and the room behind the bookshelf led to basically a secret filing cabinet, a storage unit for the park's darkest operational secrets, the stuff that directly contradicts that sunny, perfect public image.
So not monsters or anything supernatural, just paperwork.
Potential, yeah. But damning paperwork. Think about it.
Yeah.
Sealed complaint files. Maybe about ride malfunctions, accidents, injuries that were quietly handled off the books to avoid bad press.
Okay, that makes sense for an amusement park.
Hidden payout ledgers. Maybe detailing settlements to hush people up. And this one is interesting. Boxes of pre-signed, forged autographs.
Forged autographs? Why?
To keep the auto myth alive. If he was starting to withdraw, becoming less available, but the demand for his presence, his signature, was still sky high, maybe they needed a way to maintain the illusion. Faking it.
Wow. So the image we get is boxes and boxes of contracts, legal documents, fake memorabilia, maybe slowly degrading in the damp tunnel air.
Exactly. And this theory ties directly into that theme of the park as a performance. The stage versus the backstage.
Right. What the public sees, magic, smiles, auto versus the reality behind the curtain, lawyers, settlements, maybe even fraud?
Under this theory, the yellow door wasn't hiding horror. It was hiding the boring, transactional, potentially illegal business secrets that would have completely shattered the town's faith in Otto's perfect image. The motive is pure reputation management, protecting that smile that could melt steel.
Okay, makes sense. What's theory two, the preservation theory?
Yeah, this one moves away from financial or legal stuff and into something, well, maybe a bit more uncanny, psychological. This lens suggests Otto wasn't hiding secrets from people necessarily. Maybe he was trying to preserve something, his creation, the park, or maybe even an idealized version of himself, especially if he felt his own public persona fading.
Okay, so what would be in the room in this scenario?
Less documents, more artifacts. The speculation here centers on something like a life cast room.
Life cast? Like molds?
Or maybe finished figures?
Yeah.
Storage for old props, maybe retired animatronics from rides, mascot costumes. Or perhaps, and this is where it gets really uncanny, maybe hyper-realistic wax figures.
Mm-hmm.
Figures of Otto himself, perhaps. Stored upright, almost like people waiting.
Whoa, okay, that's unsettling. But technically explainable as just storage.
Exactly. Deeply creepy, maybe, but mundane on a technical level, just asset storage. But the implication here taps into something deeper. That very human desire to stop time, right?
Mm.
To conserve an image, preserve a legacy.
So if Otto, the charismatic man, was fading, maybe illness, maybe just the pressure he was trying to lock down the idea of the park.
Or the idea of himself. Make sure his flawless public image stayed flawless forever, even if he couldn't maintain it in person. It echoes that Buzz Lightyear idea, you know? Artifacts outlive their makers. This room, full of silent, preserved figures, could have been Otto's strange, desperate attempt to freeze his perfect smiling presence in time long after he left the main stage. Legacy through artifice.
Okay, that's a very different angle. Now, theory three sounds darker. The cover-up theory.
It is. This one is more infrastructural, more conspiratorial, maybe.
Mm.
It suggests that second door behind the bookshelf wasn't just storage for old files or creepy mannequins.
Not them.
It posits that this door provided direct operational access to a hidden network, off the books tunnels, maybe secret rooms, specifically built for reputation control, clandestine activity.
So secret passages, like in the movies.
Sort of. One source hints that maybe Jay found a map inside that room. A map detailing routes and spaces that simply do not appear on any official park blueprints. The ones filed with the county, the state.
Okay, that moves way beyond just hiding embarrassing paperwork.
Oh yeah. This is hidden governance. Active operational secrecy. The motive is still protecting that smile that could melt steel. But now it's at all cost. Even if it requires sub rosa infrastructure and activities.
Like what kind of activities?
Well, if a really serious problem happened, a major unreported accident, a huge operational scandal, maybe a guest causing serious trouble, an internal dispute that couldn't be handled officially.
This secret network provided a way to deal with it, quietly.
A bypass. A way to move people or things unseen, to have meetings off record, maybe even to detain someone temporarily. Who knows? It's that classic idea of control hiding in plain sight, like you see explored sometimes with places like Disney World, using the mundane service areas to mask a private, maybe dangerous system running parallel to the public one.
So the yellow door becomes the gateway to the park's fixer network, keeping the fantasy pure no matter the ethical cost.
That's the theory, a dark administrative bypass.
All right, heavy stuff. What about the last one? Theory four, the legend theory. This sounds more meta.
It is. It's the most, let's say, academic lens. But often very insightful when you're looking at persistent urban legends. This theory basically says maybe the physical yellow door itself isn't the point.
How do you mean?
It suggests the door is just a narrative placeholder, an urban myth marker that got stitched onto the very real, very public, very unresolved disappearance of Otto. The actual contents of the room become almost irrelevant.
So the door exists because the story needed it to exist.
Pretty much. Think about it. You have this massive public figure, the heart of the town, who just vanishes without a trace. No body, no confirmed retirement, no solid reason. That creates a vacuum, a narrative hole.
And people need to fill that hole.
Exactly. Humans crave closure. So in the absence of facts, the community, the storytellers, they invent or latch onto a physical symbol to contain the mystery. The yellow door becomes the container. This connects to that Klaus Wichter idea sometimes. The erasure itself becomes the evidence.
Because Otto's disappearance is a known fact, but the reason is erased.
The existence of any unique, hidden, unexplained door becomes proof that something hidden must have been the cause. It doesn't matter what was behind it. The door itself confirms that the secret existed.
So the yellow door is like a psychological container for the town's collective confusion, their loss.
And that ensures the mystery itself, regardless of any factual contents, keeps the story alive. It's self-sustaining. The legend feeds itself because the core question remains unanswered.
Okay, so when we pull back and look at all four theories, the archive, the preservation, the cover-up, the legend itself, it feels like the Greasy Grove story is about more than just one hidden room or one missing man.
Absolutely. It starts to speak to the whole system, doesn't it? The commercial system of the park, maybe even the town social system.
How so?
Well, the park thrived because people believed in the fantasy. It wasn't just entertainment. It required a kind of obedience to the Wonderland narrative, a loyalty both civic and emotional that Otto cultivated.
And that belief, that loyalty, was kind of the park's real foundation, a fragile one.
You could argue it was its ultimate false front. The whole structure depended on everyone playing along, trusting the system, trusting the leader. It reminds me of that Monopoly callback. The game trains you before it pays you.
Meaning the park was training the town?
In a way. Training them in belief. Training them to accept the structure, accept the fantasy, don't look too closely at the mechanics. And then Jaywalker comes along.
And finds the service tunnels. The mundane reality.
And then the yellow door. The anomaly. The thing that shatters the training, that forces you to see the operational gears grinding away beneath the shiny paint of the Wonderland, it questions the whole system.
That leads to another point, witnesses. When human testimony is missing or unreliable, like with Otto's disappearance.
Objects and places become the witnesses. They hold the memory, the evidence. Jaywalker is the human witness, yes, but his story is filtered, maybe incomplete.
But the door.
The yellow door itself is the primary artifact, the objective witness. It's like that image of Luke Skywalker's humming lightsaber blade. The object itself testifies to a power, a history, a hidden truth, just by existing and being unique.
So the door being yellow in a sea of red.
It's the physical proof. Unique, non-compliant, in a hallway of standardized, compliant red doors. It testifies that something forbidden, something intentionally separated from the normal, documented system, existed.
It holds more truth than a potentially altered logbook.
Arguably, yes, because it physically embodies the exception, the deviation from the rule. It stands as testament to Otto's final secret operational act, whatever that purpose truly was, archiving, preserving, covering up, or just fading away behind it.
Let's bring it back to Jaywalker for a second. His journey is kind of the listener's journey here, right?
Yeah.
Encountering the unexpected.
Totally. He starts off doing the most mundane thing imaginable, sweeping damp concrete, low-level employee, just following orders.
And then, boom, cracks the yellow door.
His initial motive is probably just simple curiosity, maybe a little thrill of breaking the rules. But his actions, pushing the door, going inside, finding the bookshelf, opening the second door, they pull him right into the heart of the park's biggest secret.
It's like that Mario callback, chasing the castle changes the player first.
Exactly. The pursuit itself transforms him. He goes from being this passive, obedient cog in the machine to an active participant, maybe even the central figure in the town's most enduring mystery.
His decision to open those doors fundamentally changed how he saw Greasy Grove, didn't it? And his own role in it.
He sought the truth behind the fantasy castle. And in doing so, he became tangled up in the legend forever. He wasn't just sweeping floors anymore. So when you boil it all down, the yellow door at Greasy Grove, the real tension there, the thing that keeps it fascinating, is that stark contrast. You've got the town's beloved heart, right? The public fantasy, Otto's smile, the Wonderland. versus the hidden machinery, the operational secrets, kept behind very specific, color-coded, even double-layered barriers down in the tunnels.
Otto's greatest trick wasn't the rides, maybe. It was making people believe the backstage didn't exist. Or didn't matter.
Or that it was just as wholesome as the front stage. The tunnels were always there, the concrete was always damp, the red doors always lined the halls. Reality was always present.
Yeah.
Just confirms that idea again. Control hides best, most effectively, right out in plain sight.
Yeah.
Hidden within the mundane.
Okay, so this leaves us with one last thought. Something for you, the listener, to really chew on that kind of goes beyond the direct sources but pulls it all together. It's about agency.
Hmm.
We know the door was locked when Jay first saw it. We know it was mysteriously cracked open later. So does the ultimate meaning of that yellow door, whether it hid an archive, a creepy preservation room, a dark cover-up network, or if it was just a myth magnet, does that meaning change depending on who cracked it open?
That's a fascinating question.
Think about it. Was it Otto himself making one last cryptic gesture, leaving a breadcrumb before vanishing completely? Was it Jay? Did his mind play tricks in the dark, silent tunnel? Did he imagine the crack or even pry it open slightly himself without realizing, fueling his own discovery?
Or option three.
Or was it someone else entirely? Some unknown park operative, maybe checking on the secret room or perhaps even setting the stage for the next phase of whatever was hidden, ensuring the secret remained accessible or maybe setting Jay up.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the identity of the person who turned the key or nudged the door. It potentially reframes everything. Archive, confession, trap, delusion.
That question feels like the real key to the whole mystery, doesn't it?
It might be. The key to the legend's longevity certainly lies in that exact uncertainty. We have the physical witness, the door, but the action that made the secret visible, that crucial moment of opening, it remains shrouded.
The ultimate lesson, perhaps, of the Greasy Grove mystery. What stays locked away and who holds the key?
A key tag waiting for a dustless pen.
AI agents are everywhere. Automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.